So here we go. Parker, I'm going to bring you. I just want to double check. Hold on a second here. I can still see you, but just nod your head up and down if you can hear us. Okay, cool. All right.
He's off my screen, so I think we're good.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Welcome to Three and Out with Jason and Kevin. I'm Jason, that's Kevin. We are brought to you by CincyJungle.com, the SB Nation Cincinnati Bengals site, and we're sponsored by Eastgate Smiles Dental Care. Kind of a special show today. For the first time, we're going to have a guest. Before we get to that, though, we did want to talk about, just briefly for a second, because we'd be remiss not to bring it up, but the Bengals did sign tight end Irv Smith Jr., and cornerback Sidney Jones. The tight end room was bare. Devin Asiasi was the only tight end on the roster with any playing experience. And Irv Smith Jr., he's a little bit smaller of a tight end, but he's fast. He's more of a receiver than a blocker. But now they have a tight end with some experience. And then Sidney Jones, I think it's obviously a depth signing. Kevin, why don't you share your thoughts on those before we bring Parker onto the show.
Sidney Jones is a replacement for Eli Apple. I think they're roughly comparable. I mean, we get into the nuts and bolts later, but that's what we're looking at. Irv Smith is a starting level tight end. He's got a little bit more of a breakout percentage than Hayden Hurst, but other than that, he's competent. He's good. Little on the small side, but we'll take it. I'm just glad we got a tight end, man. I was very, very nervous about our tight end situation.
I do love the fact that Irv Smith Jr. Chose the Bengals over the Dolphins specifically to play with Joe Burrow, even though Tua was his quarterback in college. And when they were in college and they played against Joe Burrow, they beat Joe Burrow 29-0. That was the last college game Joe Burrow lost.
People want rings, man.
Yep, exactly. All right, Kevin, why don't you bring on our guest here?
We're bringing on Parker Blake. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you absolutely need to. He's a premium follow pretty much all season, but especially this type during draft season. He is going to step in as an O-line expert. We're going to quiz him. We're going to see if he knows this stuff. Parker, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, happy to be here. Hey, I'm no expert. I just like watching fat guys run around on the turf, I guess.
You watch enough fat guys run around, you eventually become at least partially an expert.
Yeah, I'm trying. No, I'm trying my best.
I've always respected your opinion, and there's a lot of depth questions. There's a lot of questions in the later rounds of this draft that I don't know a lot about. I don't feel like a lot of people don't. That's part of the reason we wanted to have you on, is I think maybe you can point us in the right direction of a couple people to take a look at. Before we do all that, let's just talk about the O-line in general, man. I think the big question is Jonah going to play right tackle? If not, Collins, how do you feel about the current state of the O-line as a whole?
Yeah, no, I really want Jonah to stay and play right tackle. I think he can be a good right tackle. I don't think he's going to be any like elite top three right tackle, but I think he's, especially for the price that he's going to be paid, I think he's going to be just fine. Just like I said last season, I think he was playing his wage. I think he'll do it again this year. I think a lot of people are down on him for his play, but he's been hurt for who knows how many seasons at this point. And I don't think – I was really low on Collins last season. I think Jonah's going to be a clear upgrade over Collins if that's the way they go. So, hoping. Okay.
So, the question I have for you is Orlando Brown Jr. joined the Orange and Black Insider and talked a little bit about – the fact that switching from one side to the other is tough. Do you think that Jonah Williams will struggle at right tackle to start with if he's not traded, or do you think that he'll make that transition seamlessly, or what do you think?
I mean, it all depends on how much he works on the offseason. If he spends the majority of just kind of this free period in between the season and camp or the season and like OTAs, then kind of trying to work a left tackle deal somewhere else or trying to get traded, I think it could be a little rougher for him in the summer. But if he just commits to playing right tackle, gets in the gym, works on his technique, works his feet, works his hands, and really just commits to that role for the year, I think it'll be just fine. So it really just depends on how much he's interested in playing for the Bengals, even though it is at the right tackle position, or if he just wants to keep trying to pursue. And that's where I think there needs to be a conversation. That's where I don't know how all the behind-the-scenes stuff works, but there needs to be a conversation between him and the organization where, because it is a trade. Everyone keeps talking like he kind of gets to choose if he's staying or going. But, I mean, if the Bengals don't want him to go anywhere, he's not going anywhere. There has been times where people have requested trades, and the Bengals are like, awesome, cool, see you in the summer. So,
yeah. I feel like that happens more often than not with the Bengals. Yeah. They do not like being told what to do as far as trades are concerned. But
no,
an interesting point, because that's what scares me about this, is if I knew for certain Jonah was ready to roll, right tackle, had time to prepare, I'd go, okay, good, keep him on the team. We'll see what we can get in the draft. Good to go. I very much worry he's going to drag his feet, and he is not going to be ready. And then we have an injured Collins, a not ready Jonah, and whoever we grab in the draft. That's why I'm starting to lean heavily toward I want draft attack in the top two rounds of this draft. What do you think? What would you do?
That's where it comes down to. I mean, Frank's talked about how he's planning on having Jonah at that spot. And so, I mean, if Jonah wants to drag his feet, it's only going to hurt him. I think he's got to understand that. I don't think swinging at right tackle is a bad move. But like I said, I mean, it all depends on what's behind the scenes. Like, if they've already talked to him and he's committed, then there's no reason to, in my opinion. You can still find that long-term answer. Like, if a right slides, like Darnell Wright, like, there's no reason to not pick him up. I don't think you should reach for a tackle or force a tackle pick as long as you feel confident in Jonah being there. Now, if there's the whole conversation of him trying to still get out or whatever may happen, then I think it puts that a little higher on the priority list. But like you said, I mean, the tight end room, even though they brought on Irv Smith, like, it's still not deep. So
no,
let's not forget about that.
So real quick, I think a lot of the trade request came, you know, the report came out today or last night, I think actually it was, that he was blindsided. You know, he wasn't told about this. And, you know, I think that this signing came kind of unexpectedly and quickly to the Bengals. I know that Orlando Browns Jr., his people kind of reached out to the Bengals. It wasn't the Bengals that reached out to them. So it kind of came together before they had a chance. But this is the NFL. It's a business. I mean, every single time the Bengals or any team signs someone, they're not going to go out and knock on the door of that, you know, the person playing that position and say, hey, is it okay with you if we make our team better? So I think that he requested a trade partially because of that, but also partially because left tackles are paid more. You know, if he goes into the last contract of his season at right tackle, especially if he struggles, I mean, it could really hurt his paycheck or his prospects of signing a big contract after that. The question I have for you is, do you think that I just totally blanked on the question. Holy crap, guys. I'm sorry.
You're good.
Oh, man.
Okay. I have a question. Yeah. Volson, what is your opinion on Volson? Because I feel like the Volson effect is the exact opposite of the Jonah Williams effect. We drafted Jonah too high, and so he gets over-criticized for his play because he doesn't play like a first-round draft pick. Volson stepped up when necessary. And so I feel like he gets overly praised. Are you happy with Volson as our starting guard? Or would you try to introduce a little competition into the room?
Well, I think that's funny because I feel like I see a lot of people talk about how he was underwhelming last year. And I feel like there's a lot of people that need to understand that he was a fourth-round draft pick. I think he did really well for a fourth-round draft pick, but I'm not opposed. I'll never be opposed. And that's where, I mean, I thought Jonah – I mean, there was a whole conversation with Jonah Williams and Orlando Brown where – I thought they were kind of sixes. I mean, it kind of depends on what you're looking for. You did have a perennial Pro Bowler, but I thought Jonah could get to that level. And I think the same thing with Volson, where I think if you can introduce competition, it's never bad. I mean, and just like a clear upgrade is never bad. Like, if you can sign a person that's already proven to be better than what Volson was last year, there's no reason not bring him on. And that's where if you have one of these top interior line prospects in the draft that's kind of fallen into your lap, there's no reason to not swing, because even if – it is a depth piece, which I know we want all seven draft picks to start somehow. But if you can find a good quality depth piece on this team, like, there is nothing that should hold you back from getting that, especially if it can be competitive for that starting spot. That only makes the whole room better. So,
sure.
Okay.
I do remember what I was going to say. Oh. Go ahead.
Real quick. Then you seem like you kind of expect Volson to maybe take a step this year.
Yeah, I think year 1 to 2, year 2 to 3, we're going to see a big jump from him. Because, I mean, I was impressed seeing, like, watching his college film, his feet were awful. Like, I was very concerned with that draft pick. And then just watching his first reps in preseason games, I was like, holy shit, he's already improved. Like, that's crazy. So I'm excited to see, like, I feel like he's committed to the process. I'm excited to see where he can go.
Well, all right.
I like that quite a bit.
The question I have for you is, it's not very often that a 25-year-old left tackle with 40-plus starts comes available, whether it be in free agency or the draft. Is there a reason in your mind? Now, it could just be because the Bengals don't have any leverage because, you know, he just requested a trade. But you would think that someone with that experience and that age, the phones would be ringing. Do you think that that's just not going to be the case, that they want too much for him? Or what do you think maybe the realistic trade value is? I mean, I know we're a month away from the draft. It could kind of ramp up as the draft gets here. But do you think that other teams around the league have a sense that the Bengals are going to want too much?
Well, I think it all comes down to, I think the Bengals consider him their starting right tackle. Whether he wants to or not, when they have the depth chart up on the whiteboard, he is the starting right tackle. And so they're going to expect compensation for a starting right tackle, not a guy switching from left to right, not a mid-grade left tackle. They expect starting right tackle compensation. And that's where I think a lot of Jonah's value is going to come if something doesn't fall into the draft to somebody, or if we get injuries in camp, or if we get camp cuts. Like, I think he's going to kind of be in that phase of the trade game, because especially right now, teams are more committed to looking at prospects. I don't think there's going to be a lot of trade action this month. I'd happily eat my words, but I think he's just going to be kind of sitting on the roster. And that's where I worry about him dragging his feet for the whole spring, just kind of waiting for someone to move on him. That's where that kind of concern comes in. But I think, yeah, I don't think he has any real value until maybe day 2 of the draft, honestly.
Okay. Let's pretend just for a second, just kind of switching gears, that, you know, day 1 of camp starts, or, you know, we're in the preseason, Jonah Williams is on the team, he's on board, he's going to play right tackle, and Leo Collins is fully healthy. If you know, Leo Collins played right tackle last year. I'm not expecting him to be healthy, but just for the sake of this argument, he is. Where do you see the two of them? How do they, you know, how obviously, you know, Jonah Williams hasn't played right tackle in the NFL yet, but where do you see them lining up against each other, stacking up against each other?
Well, I mean, that's all about how you define fully healthy for Lyle Collins at this point in his career. Like, if we're talking pre-hip surgery healthy, then, I mean, Collins is one of the best right tackles in the league. But, I mean, if we're looking still lingering back issues, just like if we're looking at like week 6, 7 last season for Collins, I think Jonah can beat him out easy if he wants to. I think Collins – I actually heard Brandon Thorne talking about even moving Collins to that left guard spot, or having him compete for that guard spot if he's willing. Because, I mean, I feel like he wasn't mobile enough to be a tackle. He got beat around the edge a lot. I mean, we all saw him flopping all over the field. Don't act like he didn't.
He was down every other play, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But if he slides into that left guard spot, he has a smaller box to work within. He can kind of lean on his strengths in the run game. I mean, that would be a clear upgrade over Volson, in my opinion, even if he still has some of the lingering issues, just because that's just kind of what he does and that's what he's good at. So, but I think Jonah can beat him at the right tackle spot. I just, that's not a competition for me.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to crown Duke Tobin as GM of the year, no matter what anybody says. If we take Orlando Brown and upgrade the left tackle spot, then move Jonah Williams and upgrade the right tackle spot, and then put Collins at guard and upgrade that spot, it will be insane if that happens. Now, that might be shooting for the moon, but damn if that wouldn't be good.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, that'd be a huge upgrade to the whole unit, and you're really only adding one guy. Like, you're only changing out one guy.
Right, that would be just proof that Duke Tobin is playing chess and all the other NFL GMs are playing checkers or mahjong or whatever you want to say it is.
It's ahead of the curve.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, so the offensive line, let's just say, you know, penciled in day 1, you have Orlando Brown Jr., left tackle, Cordell Volson, left guard, Ted Karras, center, Alex Kappa right guard, and then let's say Jonah Williams right tackle. I mean, is there any doubt in your mind that that offensive line is better, obviously better than it was last year? But if, like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how big of an improvement do you see that moving Jonah to the right and adding Orlando Brown Jr.?
I'm super interested because I need to do a better film dive. I haven't gone too deep because I've been in draft season, but I really did feel like Orlando Brown and Jonah were relatively even. I mean, it's getting to the numbers. I know Jonah had the sacks, but I mean, you look at the pressure rate, look at the level of competition, look at who was behind the center. I mean, there's a whole bunch of variables in there. I'm really interested to see how Brown pans out. I have a lot of faith. Obviously, he's a perennial Pro Bowler. He's not going to be a downgrade from Jonah. But I want to see how big of a difference it is talent-wise. I don't know if Brown's going to be miles ahead of Jonah. I'd love if he was. But, I mean, even if he's 5-6 spots better, I think Jonah's 5-6 spots better than Collins. I mean, that's a pretty significant improvement. So, I mean, for me, I mean, just pencil in, like, what I know now. I mean, that's still – I mean, got to give it, like, a 6 or 7 still. That's a pretty big jump, in my opinion.
Right. Absolutely. All right. So, looking toward the draft, you know, let's say the Bengals were able to trade Jonah for a third or whatever. So, there's a hole at right tackle at that point. Actually, before we get to the draft, where does Jackson Carman fit into the conversation? Do you think that they have him working at tackle this year? Do you think he's off the team? Do you think that he's in the conversation to compete for that starting spot? I know in the Buffalo game, people, you know, everyone was really happy with the way he played, and then they went up against the Chiefs. I know, you know, I don't think it's any coincidence that the two teams that played in the Super Bowl against each other are the two teams that had more sacks than any other defenses. Mm-hmm. The Eagles had the most, and then the Chiefs had the second most. And, you know, Jackson Carman struggled against the Chiefs. Where do you see Jackson Carman in the conversation in 2023?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Because I feel like he could have a nice role for a year or two just sitting behind Orlando Brown, but I don't think he's ever going to be a starting level player. I think he's a quality backup. And I don't know if he's worth keeping on the roster as a quality backup, depending on who else they get in the room. But I mean, we have to remember he might've impressed in the playoffs, or everyone was impressed by him in the snow game, which is a whole different conversation. But I mean, he was a healthy scratch for how many games last season? Like, there's a reason that he wasn't on the bench all season until they needed him on the bench or even on the field. So, I mean,
right.
I've never been too high on him. I still think he's a better guard. I don't think he has great athleticism, and he's got a lot of good power. And that's why I like putting him on the inside, just because he can handle those bigger guys. I don't think he moves well in space. Some people are going to disagree with that, which is fine. But I think he has limited mobility. I think he has a slow set, but he's got a great punch. So,
okay.
No one on this podcast guard,
great depth piece, but that's about it for me.
Yeah, I don't think.
Yeah, the mental gymnastics people had to go through to convince themselves that one start that looked good in the freakiest conditions we've seen all year somehow means that Jackson Carman's back in the conversation. He was written off by every fan until one game in the snow, and suddenly it's like, oh, I think we should let him compete. Yeah, let him compete. We're not going to see him on that field if we're lucky.
Yeah, no. If he competes, he'll be a healthy scratch again. I mean, you had. Oh, linemen were shuffling around in the snow because they didn't want to pick their feet up. DNs couldn't get off. I mean, we saw our own defensive line couldn't really get – I mean, they struggled getting pressure all year. But, I mean, they weren't really getting off the ball very well. I mean
– Right.
I threw away that game, and I got really high on Sharping after that game, which we saw how that worked out in the Chiefs game. So that hurt my feelings. But
yeah, you know, I think the reality of it is the Bengals lost Jonah Williams. They lost – Alex Kappa, and they lost Lael Collins, kind of bang, bang, bang. And that's part of the reason they got beat by the Chiefs. I mean, to say that it's not, I think it's
higher reason, in my opinion.
Well, yeah. And they still only lost by 3 points. So it's super exciting. So I did want to, you spoke about Max Sharping. They signed Cody Ford. I don't think a lot of people know a lot about him. I don't know if they signed him to be an interior offensive lineman. I know he's played both tackle and guard. Can you share a couple thoughts on Cody Ford?
Yeah, so they signed him, and they're super interesting, but they're letting him play right tackle, and that's how it came out. Like, he requested to come in as a right tackle, and they said okay, which them just letting a player that doesn't really have a big name dictate what he's doing makes me feel some type of way about the quality we're probably going to get out of that guy. Right. Keep that in the back of your mind. But, I mean, he's just another depth piece. He's going to compete for that spot. I honestly bet he gets kicked into the inside because I tweeted about that earlier today, but the Bengals need to get better quality backups and honestly just more depth inside to compete for those spots, whether it is Volson, whether it is kicking Karras back out to left guard. I mean, there's a bunch of scenarios you can run, but I think they need more quality interior help. I mean, right, currently on the roster, like as of today, you have three starting level tackles on the team, and then you have a Jackson Carmen. You have a Adeniji, which I know people are up and down on, or mostly down. I guess I'm up, but and then you have Cody Ford, who's playing tackle. I mean, you have all these tackles, and the quality of work that they currently have inside is concerning to me. Okay. So I bet they kick Cody Ford inside, but I don't think he's going to be a off the bench type of guy personally.
Okay. So
I do wonder how that conversation actually went with the letting him compete at right tackle. It really feels like I don't know that you're humoring him a little bit, like, oh, but I want to compete at right tackle. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, you can compete at right tackle one day in. Yeah. All right. You failed your competition. Let's check.
Yeah. I coach high school football. I see it every season. Like, I'm going to come in. I'm going to be a receiver. I'm going to be a left tackle. And I'm like, okay, in 2 days, you're not going to be that anymore, but we'll definitely let you give it a go.
Yeah.
That's how I feel coaching my son's little league teams. Like, Dad, I want to pitch. Like, yeah. Okay. Bud. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fine. Go ahead. So you said just a second ago, I kind of want you to expand on something. You said you're up on Hakeem Adeniji. There's going to be a lot of people that want to know why. So why?
Yeah. That's like, I swear it's the hottest take I ever have, and I don't understand it. But no, I mean, I understand that he hasn't put out great work, but he's also moved positions a lot. He's kind of been like the Swiss Army knife backup for the last however many years. Like, he's never really been able to focus on just improving in one area. And he's one guy that I've said, if they just lock him in and say, hey, you're going to be our sixth guy off the bench, you're going to be our right behind Lyle Collins off the bench, we're going to have you work as a tackle, focus on becoming a better tackle, I really think he can improve a lot. He's got great athleticism. He's got patient hands. He's got a good wide base. He's like, he has all the traits there, but he's never been surrounded by any good talent, which is another Jonah Williams topic. I mean, right. These guys aren't going to look good. Cause even if they're the best guy on the line, they still got four anchors dragging them down. So,
sure.
But, yeah, so, I mean, you got to be surrounded by quality talent. But even if he's not, I mean, the games he played at tackle, I mean, the reps he's gotten, he looks good to me on film. I mean, he's going to have whiffs. He doesn't have a lot of starts under his belt, doesn't have a lot of reps under his belt. But I like what I see out of him, and I want him to work out. I think he can be good depth for us moving forward. I don't think we need to cut him for no reason. He's not that expensive, and he's not that terrible. I think he's a great depth piece, maybe even a long-term option at tackle.
Okay.
Oh, no, I 100% agree. When Collins went down and Adeniji went in, I was one of the ones.
He looked good.
This might be an upgrade. Like, y'all need to calm down. Like, the way Collins was playing, like, honestly, this could end up working in our favor. Not that I wanted somebody to get hurt, but I'm just saying strength of the line as a whole.
Sure.
I like Adeniji. I do.
Yeah, I got shredded. I got shredded on Twitter when Collins went down and Adeniji went in. And I was like, wow. He looks really good. Like, he's doing this well. He's doing that well. And then it was just the we hated energy train. And I was like, wow, I did not realize we hated energy that much. So,
well, I think that, Kevin, I think we're ready to kind of move on to some draft topics when it comes to the offensive line. Before we get to draft, I want to play our little commercial here.
Eastgate Smiles Dental Care is a warm and welcoming environment where expertise and customer service come together. As a local business, they love helping their fellow Cincinnatians manage their oral health and achieve a perfect smile. They pair the latest technology with years of experience to give you a smile worth showing off. They are dedicated to quality and convenience and can even perform dental crown procedures the same day in most cases. You like your smile, but they are here to help you love it. They personalize your care and match your needs. Call them today at 513-528-1150 to learn what they can do for your pearly whites.
Give them a call. They can help your pearly whites. All right. So we kind of talked a little bit about it, but you know, let's say the Bengals trade Jonah, Lyle Collins and Hakeem Adeniji are on the team at, you know, penciled in at right tackle and Lyle Collins isn't healthy. The Bengals are picking at number 28. Who do you personally hope is available for them to take?
Paris Johnson Jr.
I don't. Well, yeah. Real quick, okay. Back that up. I don't think right tackle's off the board, even if Jonah doesn't get traded. Because I don't think
I don't think so either.
Or the end of day one. And I think that they would be stupid if the right person fell to them and they can upgrade and they can steal that right tackle position for years to come, especially having somebody like Jonah Williams for him to play behind for at least a couple games for a little while, get his feet. Like, I don't think right tackle's off the board no matter what. And I'm starting to lean that way no matter what.
No, I agree with you. Yes. I don't think it's off the board. I'm just trying to just, you know, let's say they have to do it. So you said Paris Johnson Jr. I do think he's actually going to be there at 28.
No, oh, no, he's a top five guy, honestly, except none of those teams need tackles. They need other pieces. It's interesting though, because I mean, like you just brought up, I mean, if Jonah's still on the team and they do grab a right tackle in the first round, that honestly probably opens them up to be more willing to trade him during the draft opposed to waiting until after. So that's something to watch too. If one of these tackles fall and they grab one, I bet Jonah gets moved during the draft, but I'm not putting any of my own pennies on that. But as far as who I think is potentially, I mean, it's the draft. Anything can happen. So, I mean, there's no one that isn't going to be there except maybe a handful of guys. I mean, we're not going to pick up CJ Stroud for obvious reasons.
Right.
Obviously everyone wants Darnell Wright. I think he's the most outside of Broderick Jones and Paris Johnson, who I both have. Those are my two guys. Darnell Wright's my number three OT. I think he's got potential to fall. I think the league's getting a lot higher on him. I don't know if they were ever low on him. I just think he didn't really have the hype before. I've heard concerns about him. I don't know how legit they are. I think he's the most startable tackle, even compared to the top two guys. He's got a really high floor, in my opinion. I just don't see a lot of lumps, which is honestly concerning, to be honest, because I'm like, what am I missing? But yeah, I'm really high on Wright. I know a lot of people are really high on Harrison. I've been low on him. Everyone keeps telling me to go watch more film, so I guess I'll do that. But yeah, I just haven't liked what I've seen. Skoronski, I think he's gone too.
He's gone.
I think really the biggest options for me at 28, you know, to answer your question in a shorter way. Darnell Wright, I don't think he's there. He's a great option if he is there. I'm sprinting to the podium myself. Everyone loves Anton Harrison. There's a lot of people high on DeJuan Jones. I'm kind of lower on both of those guys. I know everyone wants the Twin Towers, but, you know, just some red flags popping up for DeJuan Jones lately. So we'll see what happens with all of that info. But
okay. With his lack of testing, he's off for me in the first round pick. Yeah. I'm a Bengals fan. We know this path. We know exactly where it leads, but for some reason we keep walking down it over and over and over again. I worry they will take him. I don't want them to take him. But what I'm interested in is Darnell Wright's rocketing up the boards. Everybody's falling in love with this guy. He's absolutely, like, if he falls to us, which I don't think he will, he's the guy for me. He is my pick at 28 almost no matter what at this point. What?
So you sprint back. You have that card written. If he's there, you sprint it. Sprint
instantly.
Up there.
But Anton Harrison. But Anton Harrison, why are you lower on him than it seems like most are?
I don't think he has good feet. I think he's slow out of his stance. I don't think he moves his feet particularly well in his set. And it's the same conversation people had about Wanya Morris, who's a later round tackle, the right tackle for Oklahoma. But like Michigan, I think Oklahoma protects their tackles just schematically. They do a lot of play action. If you look at the PFF, like the true pass set stat, they have very low numbers in that category because they don't really do a lot of just straight drop back stuff. So a lot of those guys, there's concerns about how they translate to the NFL, especially in a straight drop back system, just because they're not used to kind of being in that environment. Maybe they do fine. Maybe they fall apart because they're not used to just taking on rushers consistently like that. And that's why I'm a little lower, just kind of the unknown there. The way his feet looked, I'm concerned about him setting consistently during a game. And the Bengals, I mean, they're a pass team 67% of the time. So,
yes.
So,
okay. It kind of sounds to me that to you, at least, assuming one of the big three doesn't fall, which I don't think they will, it's kind of Darnell Wright or bust in the first round. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I mean,
as far as
my only first round guys are Paris, Broderick Jones, Darnell Wright, and I still want Skoronski to be a guard, but I guess we can call him. I call him a first round O lineman because I will not call him a tackle. And it's not an arm length thing for everyone that keeps telling me that I need to not worry about arm length because I think that's the stupidest mark ever, but whatever. I just think he's built better and was going to play better as a guard. So I hope he goes somewhere that kicks him inside. But okay. Those are like the top. Those are the first round guys for me personally.
Okay. So let's say.
I feel like arm length is one of those self-fulfilling prophecy things. I mean, if you don't meet the measurables, you don't get to play the position. So instantly all the best tackles have long arms. It's same thing about like hand size or height as far as quarterbacks are concerned. Like, well, they don't let you play it if you don't meet these measurables. So of course all the best players have those measurables. I do agree.
What's the numbers game, you know? If you're getting if like 28 of your 32 tackles all have arms that are 33 inches or longer and only the four tackles that don't, I mean Rashawn Slater, I believe, had short arms, and he's pretty damn good. So, going to ride that train. Yeah.
Also, Kevin, don't forget that Kenny Pickett has tiny little baby boy hands. And he
so does Joe Burrow.
Yes, so does Joe Burrow. But, yeah, but Kenny Pickett's tiny little doll hands. You know, he's up in Pittsburgh. So, all right. So, let's say, you know, they go through the first round. They don't take an offensive lineman. They take a tight end. They take a corner. I think they could take a cornerback, personally.
Twitter's going to riot if we take a corner.
I could see it. They absolutely love their first round corners.
Just so we can have a whole night of people just screaming into the void. I would love to be there for that.
Yep. I'm telling you, they love their first round corners. And Chidobe Awuzie is coming off an injury and he's entering last year's contract. And Mike Hilton's 29. You know how they feel about it? They're like Leonardo DiCaprio when it comes to 30-year-olds. I want my teenagers.
Yep.
Oh, that's younger. Sounded bad. The teenager thing sounded bad. Mid-20s. That's what I want, mid-20s. All right. So let's say they go a different position in the first round. What are some guys that you think that they could target, you know, day two, day three, that could step in, maybe not start, but contribute by year two?
Oh, man, I love – and it's funny because I feel like everyone's talking about how – there's like 45 players that could go in the first round. But I think the conversation really is, I think there's like 14 to 16 first round quality guys. And then being so kind of mid-round heavy, all these guys kind of just get forced into the first round. So I think your quality drops off around pick 20, in my opinion, unless somebody slides crazy. But then it's like from the end of the first to the middle of the third, I think almost all of those guys – at least O-line wise, are pretty evenly matched. They all have their pros, they all have their cons, but none of them are like crazy, man, I don't want to touch that guy. So the mid-rounds are where it gets fun for me. I almost hope that they go and try and get one of these like late-round steals because, I mean, there's guys like Warren McClendon. I love Warren McClendon. He will be my OT5 until somebody proves me wrong. He was the right tackle at Georgia. He was Broderick Jones' little brother, and that's why no one knows who he is, but he's going to be a damn good tackle.
We kind of had a little Twitter exchange about Warren McClendon. It took me a while to figure out because if you type in McClendon, you get Warren McClendon and McClendon Curtis, you just referred to him as McClendon. It took me. I was watching some highlights and stuff. I eventually got there, but it was a bit of a journey because I've never heard of this guy. He's one of your top five, and I have never even heard this name dropped. Why is he on nobody's radar if he's so high on yours?
I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm a crackpot, but we'll see what happens. I also said Creed Humphrey was a top 20 player, and I was right about that one. So,
yeah, you were.
But Warren McClendon, man, he's so balanced. He uses his length really well. I don't know his measurements off the top of my head, but he's really patient too. And that's what I love seeing these tackles that can get back and they can just wait for the rusher. Because I feel like you get a lot of these guys, even in the NFL, where they try and lunge at guys and get hands on early. But if you're willing to wait for these DNs, it makes the rush so much longer, which gives you just free seconds in the pocket without even having to block anybody. And I think that's one of my favorite traits of his is just his balance and his patience. But he also looks super smooth in his set. I will say one con, because he's not perfect, because like I say, he's a late round guy. I didn't see him do a lot of vertical setting. It was a lot of flat or wide setting, jump setting. And that doesn't work. Obviously, you can't do the same style of set every single rep in the NFL. So interested to see if he can get a vertical set. I can't imagine it's that hard because, personally, I think it's harder to work with the wide set, which is more kind of attacking the DN opposed to kicking back and waiting for him. But, I mean, using that wide set and pushing the edge rushers around the pocket is kind of where he made his money. So, and I just, yeah, I mean, he just looks like a great prospect, especially for being, like, I think the earliest I've ever seen him picked is, like, late fourth round. So, yeah. I think he's a freaking steal, dude.
I mean, yeah, he's mid-200s on, like, any board I could find. And if he is anything like, I'm going to have to watch more tape because this is kind of stuff that gets me excited, is grabbing somebody like that in round 3, 4, 5, wherever he ends up falling. This is the kind of depth stuff we're talking about. This is the kind of stuff that gets us to the Super Bowl when injuries happen. What about round 2 and 3? Are you on the Cody Mauch train?
I love Cody. I want to learn how to say his name so bad. I've heard Mock. I've heard Mauch. I've heard Ma. Like I want him to get drafted so I can officially know how to say his name.
I've been committing to love Mauch, but I am not confident when I say it. Yeah, I'm not confident when I say that name.
I think I like Ma just because it sounds like the most last, like it's the last name that I feel like I can say without giggling a little bit. I can't say Mauch with a straight face. I can't say Mock with that, with a, like I, yeah. So Ma's what I go with, but we'll see what the true answer is. But I had him as my number one interior guy for a long time. Until I think probably last week. And that was, it's, and this is why I tried explaining, which is kind of, it sounds a little backwards, but I don't think he's the best center in the draft. I don't think he's the best guard in the draft, but I think his 3 to honestly 5 position versatility and just his motor and his, he's shown that he can play all these different positions and play them effectively. I don't think he won't be the best player, whatever position he plays out of the class. But I think that versatility, especially when it comes to the Bengals, is so huge. And, I mean, having a guy that can just plug and play wherever you need him last minute, like that's a guy you can't not have on your bench. And I think he's a starting quality guy. And then if you have an injury go down, you can just slide him around. You don't need to leave him at that spot. He'll succeed other places. And that's why I had him at the top for so long, because he's just – the versatility is huge for me. And then he's just a monster, dude. He flies around that field, man. So the aerodynamics.
He feels unreachable. He feels unreachable to me every time you see him, mock drafts, everything else. He's exactly like middle distance between picks.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's a reach if you're trying to grab him at 28. It's a reach up if we're trying to we'd have to trade up, I guess, in order to get him. There's no way he's falling to 60.
Yeah, he's one of those late 40s, early 50s type of guys, and it's just sucks.
Which is why we should consider at least trading back in the first if the value's there. I am a big proponent of potentially trading back in the first.
I'll always pound the table. If you're in the last 8 picks of the first round, just trade back because you'll get twice the picks and you'll get the same value. Like,
yep,
that's a win-win to me. But
so real quick, I do have a question for you. I know, obviously, your kind of specialty is offensive line. How much work do you put into watching tight ends block that are coming into the draft?
I've actually really tried to, like, actually do it this year. I hate watching. So this is where I sound lazy, but I love watching O-linemen because I know where to find them.
Right.
I struggle watching D-line because they get subbed out. They get shifted around. I have to, like, pause every play and, like, figure out where they are. But I'm watching the O-line, and I'm like, oh, my guy's going to be right there. If he's not right there, he's out for the play. I'll just move on to the next one. But I have tried to watch tight ends this year, and it's not been fun because, I mean, tight ends are lame to me because they don't hit people every play. But I have watched tight ends. So I'm no tight end expert just overall. But I think there are some – I mean, if we're looking at blocking tight ends, because those are the ones that matter –
yes.
I really think, I mean, obviously everyone loves Mayer. I have Kincaid as my tight end one just because I think the NFL is going to like a kind of like a one of those receiving type tight ends a little better than even an all-purpose guy. And I think he's got more explosive ability than Mayer does, so I have him as my one. But I have Mayer right after. And then I actually have Tucker Kraft, the South Dakota State kid, right after Mayer. I saw somebody tweet, and I – copied it, but didn't copy it. But I think Tucker Kraft is really just round 2 Michael Mayer. I think they're not going to be The difference between them once they hit the league, I don't think is going to be as dramatic as everyone's making it seem. They're very similar players. I think Kraft ended up being a bit more athletic, just testing wise. But yeah, I mean, Tucker Kraft's my guy. I don't think Mayer or Kincaid will be there at 28. Even if they are, I don't think you should draft a tight end in the first round. But no.
In the beginning. I was really excited about it. That's just early draft season stuff. You get excited about the shiny new toy, and eventually you always settle on, I want to draft a cornerback or I want to beef up the line. Like, it always goes one of those two ways by the time we get there.
We're kind of running out of time here. I did want to ask you, though, how do you see Darnell Washington? A lot of people see him as a sixth offensive lineman that just has some ball skills. Is that how you see him? Do you think that he can block better than all these other guys?
I think he's the best blocker out of the group. I think he could be a better blocker. I think he might struggle. He looks a little hand-heavy to me. He doesn't really use his hips very well, just from the film that I've seen. I haven't watched every single game from Georgia's season, obviously, but from what I've seen, everyone was really impressed by that sled drill. I thought that was a really terrible rep. So, I mean, that just shows where I'm at compared to everyone else, I guess. I'm just in my tinfoil hat over here. But I do think he's a sixth offensive lineman compared to the rest of the class. I don't think he's going to get you – I don't think he's, like, throwing a tackle out there that can catch. I don't think he's that effective of a blocker relative to, like, a true O-lineman. But, I mean, I think it'd sure be fun to watch him at the point of attack and just blowing people off the ball. So.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
All right. Kevin, do you have anything else?
No, I think that's it. We ran a little long, but I don't regret it at all. I like getting your insights.
For sure.
Again, this is Parker Blake 60 on Twitter. Do you have anything else you want to plug other than your Twitter? It seems like that's the only place I've seen you.
Yeah, that's all I'm doing right now. Hopefully we're going to get something going here soon somewhere else, but not today.
All right.
Well, like I said, during this time of year, he's a premium follow. Get all your draft, all your O-line draft insights there. I tend to.
I know Kevin got a jersey. I haven't gotten mine yet. I'm assuming that you shipped it. Is that in the mail? Is that where it's on the way?
Oh, yeah, it should be coming. Did it get lost? Checks in the mail.
It might have gotten lost. Yeah, checks in the mail. I also have to say that the hair and the beard, you look the part, man. You look
I'm
like
trying. An office. I used to have a bigger beard. I had to cut it down for work. Now I feel like a square.
But, I used to have a really big beard, too, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
This is like 2 months of growth. It's terrible.
It looks thick. Terrible. I love it. It looks really good. Thank
you. I like it. Kevin, you're off the show. Parker Blake, you're the new co-host. All right. For Parker Blake, for Kevin, I'm Jason. Thank you very much again. This is 3 and Out with Jason and Kevin. And then today, Parker, brought to you by CincyJungle.com, SB Nation's Cincinnati Bengals site, and sponsored by Eastgate Smiles Dental Care. Give them a call. See what they can do for your pearly whites today. For everybody, hoo-day.
Hoo-day.
Hoo-day.